You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. So if you're looking for any type of batteries, whether it's for your truck, your car, your trail cameras, your rangefinder, stop into a local Interstate Batteries retail location. There are thousands upon thousands of them all over the United States. Talk with a battery specialist and get the batteries that you need to go on with your life. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ohio Huntsman Podcast. And this week's episode is, I think most people's favorite time to be in the woods is we're talking about the rut. So we've done some content on the rut in the past, but each year's a little different. And, you know, the main thing we wanted to do is kind of talk about rut timing and what, you know, if you could only hunt a weekend or you could only hunt, you know, 5 days or something, what would those days be this year? And we talk a little bit of strategy, what, you know, what we look for as far as habitat or terrain features, that sort of thing. So we talk the rut. Before we get into that, though, I want to talk about our sponsor, Mastin's Deer Scent. So Deer Scent is a great tool during the rut. You know, I mean, everybody gets a bottle of estrus and that can be very, very successful, honestly. Lots of different techniques with that. The cool thing about Mastin's is they've got more than just liquid scent. They've got their double scent stacker, which would allow you to layer scents. So you could have like their buck reaper scent with their estrus. So you could kind of get a buck and doe scent together, which is a pretty interesting concept and not easy to do without something like that. So check them out, mastinsdeerscents.com, or you can just go to ohiohuntsman.com/sponsors and get all of our sponsor information there. Now, what's new? What have you guys been up to? Any updates? I don't really have anything going on that I haven't updated you about prior to this, I don't think. But you guys got anything new?
I don't have too much new. I went out and hunted the parks another sit. Took my climber out, first time of the year using my climber. Unfortunately, nothing to report from there. I had some turkey, but not hunting turkey, so it's a whitetail only in the parks. You're not allowed to harvest any other game, even if it is in season. So I was covered up in squirrel, but couldn't do anything about that. And then I had some turkey come in. There were some hens came in underneath me, so it was cool to watch them. They didn't stick around long. I think they saw me trying to record them on my phone, so I didn't end up getting too good a video, but that was about all from that sit. Didn't see any deer, didn't hear any deer. It's that kind, that time of year, though, where the deer movement kind of shifts and comes down to a screeching halt in a lot of areas because they're switching from a bed to food pattern to more of their, or starting into their kind of breeding, mating patterns where they're shifting to different areas and starting to hit the scrapes and kind of start to get that breeding on the mind. So it shifts their patterns. So I think we'll just have to readjust out there and try and figure out where they're at, because where we're hunting is not where they're at. So,
okay,
that's about it for me. Oh, and I do have a shooter buck at the property. He's not daylight yet, but at least he's there. I have a picture of him.
That's good.
I have
news.
No, I mean, he's not. Yeah. So he's not, probably not quite as big as the one I shot last year, but he's significantly bigger than everything else that I've gotten. So kind of trying to keep tabs on him, keep him around, keep him fed. So we'll see what happens as the rut approaches. I think that's what that property is. It's a holds does pretty heavy, so it's a rut property. So it's getting close to the time where it's going to start lighting up, I hope. So we'll just keep tabs on it, try to keep track on them, and see if I can get one to make a mistake.
Cool. How about you, Jeff? Anything new?
So I've done a few sits, you know, just trying to harvest does, and they're evading, you know, eluding us. I don't know. I haven't ever experienced a season this slow where it just seems like everything that I do is not right, you know, just striking out. Over the weekend, hunted from the first time from a climbing tree stand. It was, I don't know, an adventure. you know, I don't have my system together yet, so it was like, I don't even know, you know.
Yeah.
Even, you know, from carrying it back, you know, because they give you these straps, but it's hard to line the straps up right. And so carrying it back there, trying not to make a bunch of noise. And then I had a tree picked out, which would have been a really great tree, but it was a walnut tree. And at the base, it was just too big around. You know, it narrowed out pretty quickly, but at the base, it was just too big around. I couldn't fit the cord around it.
Yeah.
So then I went and picked out another tree that was in a really good spot, but it had a spot where a branch of it had grown into a tree next to it. So there was no way to get around that. You know, okay. It fused to another tree. So then I went to a third tree, which was probably, I mean, it was on the small end of, you know, as small of a tree as you could have climbed. And I wasn't able to get too high in that tree. You know, probably just high enough. Because it was kind of sitting, it kind of sits on a hill that was overlooking a trail. So I probably only got maybe 8-9 foot into that tree.
Okay.
You know, so the deer that were walking on the hill with me, you know, I probably would have been basically right in their eyesight. But the deer that would be walking the trails, you know, the trail that I was trying to hunt, you know, I was up above them. So it turned out to not be too bad of a spot, but it was a mess. You know, that's just the best way I can describe it, is, you know, just tying a string to pull up the bow with, and yeah, it was a mess. So maybe next time I'll be a little bit better, and you know, now that I know what to expect.
So just like,
yeah, just
stuff wasn't dialed in, it sound, you know, like,
yeah, yeah, and
just need more practice with it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and the seat on my climber is like it's made of like rope or cord.
It's like a hammock type seat.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it had gotten twisted like onto itself, so that I was sitting there and had to fiddle around with it to untwist it, and my angles weren't right, you know, so I was sitting there kind of angled upward, which then kind of pushed me, you know, back into the tree, which then didn't really make the top when I was sitting there want to bite great. You know what I mean? I had a ratchet strap on too, but it just allowed for some play in the top part of the stand, mm-hmm. You know, the yeah. seat, which just kind of makes you a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, a little unnerving.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, speaking from someone who's I'm not by no means a veteran of using a climber, but I've used it for a couple seasons. It's an art finding your tree and knowing what the right size is. And then also you just have to be able to, it's from experience, to know where to set your cord, because the tree gets thinner a lot of times as you go up it. So at the base, you want to be tilted up a little bit. So then as you go up, it flattens out. But if you're tilted too much up, then you, like you said, you're tilted into the tree and you're not biting. If you start out flat, you go up, and then it's, you're leaning out of the tree and you feel like you're falling the whole time. So it's kind of it's an art.
Because there's no good way to adjust that once you've started climbing. Like, you can't choke down on that at all.
No. You could adjust your seat, but your foot, like your bottom part, there's no way. I mean, you'd be hanging upside down.
Oh, okay.
So you could potentially adjust the top part, but it's not a smooth, easy thing.
Right. You're just not like,
it would be very
rope slide through a prusik knot or something. It's like,
no.
Yeah. Okay.
No. It's, yeah. I mean, it's at least my stand, and I looked at Jeff's quick. I think they're the same cable style. It's basically a metal cable wrapped in rubber that has like stop points.
No, okay.
So it's not fine tuned. I mean, they're 6 inches apart. So it's like, it's this knot or this fat part of the cord, or it can go 6 inches tighter or 6 inches looser. And you kind of got, it might not be 6 inches. I haven't measured it, but you know what I mean? That's how it works. And then it locks in to like, mine locks into like a metal spring loaded safety thing. So you have to like bend that metal safety thing down, tilt the stand up to loosen the tension, pull the cord forward, and then feed it out. And then it's gotcha. Not an easy, quick little, it's doable, but you're not going to do it quietly. You're not going to do it smooth. You know what I mean? It's going to blow the woods out probably to do it, or you're going to be unsafe. You know what I mean? That's so it's, gotcha. It's an art.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all the cords, you know, like Jeff said, your ropes, you got to know. Jeff, you'll have to make yourself a pooling rope, or, you know, it's stuff like that, that until you do it and you realize like, oh, this isn't going to work, or this rope I thought was going to be real easy to pull up, well, this doesn't work. It's too long, or it's too short, or, you know, you got to have a rope that's the right distance to where you can climb whatever your range is, you know, whether that's 10 to 30 feet, however, I don't know how high you want to climb. Your rope's got to be long enough, but you don't want it too long, or else it tangles in every branch and sapling on the way down. So then you're trying to pull your bow up and your bow's hooking on trees and your rope's hooked in a tree that's next to you, and it gets to be a mess.
I even like, you know, I'm not used to climber, but, you know, talking about pull up ropes, like, you guys will laugh, but I actually wrote down like my tree climbing procedure, and there was a few details that I typed it out. There was a few details that I added to it after the first sit, because, you know, like you said, your pull up rope for your bow, I clipped it on my bow, because I used to tie a knot every time. And then I was like, man, this is such, you know, you got to tie a knot and then you got to get the bow up and you got to untie the knot. And I just ended up tying my rope to a, you know, just a cheapo carabiner. It's not a load bearing carabiner, but I'm just using it to pull my bow up. Well, where I clip it on my bow, I have better or worse success. So I clipped it to the foot stirrup, and when I lift from there, my bow like wants to roll, and, you know, it does weird stuff basically. Like, if I pick it up from the foot stirrup, the bow wants to roll over, and the scope wants to like flop over onto the ground or bang into the tree, versus if I pick it, you know, there's a hole in the back of the stock. If I pick it up from there, or I clip it back there, the, you know, the back of the stock comes up and it just lifts, and it's, you know, it's all good. So, you know, I added that to my notes for next season when I'm doing this, you know, like, oh yeah, tie it to the back of the bow because it lifts off the ground easier that way.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty known, if you look into people like with pull-up ropes on like social media and stuff, it's like a
pretty known issue where when you lower your bow down, it always wants to flip upside down onto the scope.
Yeah.
So like it's a art to try and get it to lay the right way, because you don't want it to, technically, you don't want to drop it, you know, lay it on the scope.
Right.
But it's the heavier, you know, it's top heavy. So it makes it tough because that's the heavier side of the bow. If you stand it up, you know, like the way I've always done it is on the foot stirrup, like you said, and the scope side is the heavier side. So it wants to lean that way when you set it down.
Yeah.
But
I used to have the way I was, even down to like the way you coil up your pull up rope. You know, I used to daisy chain my pull up rope. And so, you know, it kind of looks like a giant mess, but I would, you know, basically you have when you go to undo the daisy chain, you have both ends, but you don't have to undo the entire daisy chain, which in theory is great. As you climb, that daisy chain just unravels and it's all good. But what would happen is as that daisy chain's laying on the ground, it's basic, you know, it's a bunch of loops. You know, you pull a loop, you reach through the loop, you pull the cord, you know, and so you end up with the rope looped inside of itself. Well, you've got all these loops that as it's trying to come unwound, any stick laying on the ground or anything like that, you know, it would hook on that stuff, which would stop the daisy chain from unraveling. So you're like halfway up and it's starting to lift your bow off the ground or something, you know, it's like, oh, gosh darn it, you know, and then you're climbing back down, untangling the rope, and you know, so I even stuff like that. So I know what you mean, Jeff, by like, you know, just the system wasn't dialed in yet, you know. But all right, anything else you guys want to update on? Any hunting news or anything you guys have seen that people should know about?
Oh yes. Actually, now that you mention that, this info will be probably a little dated by the time this episode comes out, but not too dated, I don't think. The Ohio Wildlife Council has just amended their regulations that deer processors and taxidermists can now get certified to accept out-of-state animals.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you will have to check with your taxidermist and with your processor, but if you're playing the hunt out of state, there is now a process that they can go through to get certified to accept out-of-state animals.
Meaning you could take a deer, like a whole carcass, or, you know, you could have, like, meat still on the bone and take it to one of these processors, and they have proper cleaning and disposal procedures in place to prevent any kind of CWD contamination.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I don't know the specifics exactly. You know, you'll probably have to check with someone, you know, processor, a taxidermist who's actually going to go through the certification process. But there is a way now to get it done. So.
Okay. All right. Well, if nothing else, should we get into the topic then? All right. Let's get into it. Welcome to the Ohio Huntsman Podcast, where three brothers, Jason, Jacob, and Jeff, discuss all things hunting in Ohio. Our goal is to be your source for accurate and reliable hunting news and conservation issues in the great state of Ohio, as well as some fun and interesting conversations along the way. This is the Ohio Huntsman Podcast.
Are you listening?
So the rut is coming up here. We're probably, when you guys listen to this, it'll be, you know, early pre-rut kind of time frame, and things will be starting to ramp up. So we thought, we did an episode similar to this last year, but you know, I think the rut is a lot of whitetail hunters favorite time, and you know, if you can only take a week off work for deer hunting, then you know the rut is probably a good time to do that, to have your best chance at a buck. You know, you could argue, some people I'm sure would argue otherwise, but you know, I think a lot of people just like the excitement and mayhem of the rut, if you will. So that'll be here real soon. So we thought, you know, we would kind of do an updated version of that. If you're going to take a week off, you know, when would we take it off? If you can only hunt weekends, you know, what can you expect on your weekends this year based on, you know, when we typically see rut things happening? So with that, you know, I guess to start, right, the rut early November, and I think everybody's pretty aware that, you know, there's sort of, you know, everybody talks about the rut, but there's sort of phases of the rut, if you will. You know, are you talking about when, you know, when you say when's the rut, are you talking about when is peak breeding? Are you talking about when is all the chasing and the bucks running crazy through the woods in the middle of the day? You know, you kind of got to understand, I guess, there's phases of the rut, and it depends on what you're looking for. Like what am I trying to say here? Depending on the property you have access to, if you have access to private property, depending on how that property lays out, may depend on when you quote unquote think the rut is, or what phase of the rut you like hunting. If you're on public ground, you can kind of move to areas that, you know, are sort of typically good rut locations, I guess, if you will. But it's going to depend on the phase that you're in, right? So I don't know. What do you guys, maybe Jeff, if you want to go first, what do you look for when it comes time to hunt the rut? What are you looking for terrain wise, habitat wise? What things are you looking for a good rut setup?
Yeah, I mean, terrain / habitat wise, I mean, I'm looking for bottlenecks, you know, pinch points of, you know, like it's either, you know, like between two fields, there's a little patch of woods that connects to larger patches of woods, or like saddles and hills, you know, where it's less steep, you know, to get from, you know, over a ridge, you know, things like that, where the deer, when they're just out naturally moving, when they're, you know, when bucks are trying to cover ground, what's easiest and most secure for them to move. So yeah, that's kind of in general, you know, overview of terrain.
I would even add, like, you know, if you're in an area that doesn't have a lot of topography, even like a low, you know, a lot of times you'll see in a field, there's a low area that maybe doesn't get planted, you know, one of those like drainage swales or something. A lot of times, now, granted, I've seen bucks running through the wide open middle of a field during the rut. So, but there's nothing, you know, how do you hunt that deer, right? There's nothing, that's just a buck running crazy, right? But if you have one of these like sort of low spots, a lot of times deer will use those because they're low and they can move through there and maybe not be seen from the road, or, you know, feel a little more secure while also cutting across the field and not having to swing way out and around and like hug the tree line going out and around. So that, you know, as another sort of terrain feature to look for, I would add that as well.
Yeah, a good terrain feature for like areas that don't have a lot of topography is like creek bottoms. You know, a lot of times out, you know, Western Ohio, the more ag areas, you know, big ag fields, you know, you'll have creek bottoms, you know, just a small, you know, maybe 30 yards across hunk of woods that kind of follows the creek. And, you know, those are highways basically for the deer, especially during rut. You know, they can get down in there and move from field to field. And, you know, even when you get to a road, a lot of times those creek bottoms have a bridge. So they don't even need to cross the road. They can just go where the creek goes underneath the bridge.
Right.
So that's kind of terrain features wise. Habitat, I mean, you want to look for bedding. Because the does, until they're completely receptive, are trying to hide from the bucks. You know, the bucks are running them ragged.
Yeah.
You know, so they're trying their hardest to hide. They don't want the bucks bothering them until they're receptive. So, bedding, thick cover, things like that. Other areas where the does can kind of hide their scent, you know, like bottom lands that don't really allow a lot of wind out of them. You know, if you got like a little swampy bottom, you know, between some hills, sort of similar to creek bottoms, but, you know, a little bit more secluded, you know, because with creek bottoms, scent typically blows up and down them.
Sure.
You know, pretty easy. So all a buck's got to do is stick their head, you know, basically down in that creek bottom, and they can smell a hot doe for a long ways down that creek bottom because the scent just follows it. So any place that, you know, a doe can kind of get into to hide, if you can get on the edge of that, you know, a lot of times the bucks will be walking the edges, scent checking to see if there's any hot does in that bedding.
Yeah. And so I guess for me, I like that, you know, sort of pre-rut leading into the rut when you when you're seeing a lot of that seeking, right? Like the does are, or the bucks are out cruising around trying to find that first receptive doe, right? Because the, you know, and I don't know the chemistry of it, but, you know, the scent is in the air, if you will. The deer, the bucks can tell that the does are almost ready, and they are looking, right? I mean, it's nature's way. They want to reproduce and procreate, so they are doing their best. They're, you know, they're triggered to the first receptive doe and as many does after that. And so that's the part of the rut that I typically like, because you can go, I mean, you hear people talk about like the rut lockdown, right? And that's, I kind of see that as there are does that have become receptive or are very close. A buck will sort of push her into some deep dark hole where he can keep tabs on her, but also keep other bucks away and kind of stay in there, right? They don't, you know, that's why they call it lockdown. They just kind of lock down in an area and wait for the opportune time. Wait for the stars to align, if you will, and do their thing. But you know, your activity can kind of go down a little bit during that time. Now that's, you know, there's certainly, you'll certainly see deer, because if a deer gets run off of one area, he may say, well, forget it, I'm gonna, you know, cruise around and try to find another one. But I more prefer that sort of earlier rut seeking phase, just because I like seeing bucks running through the woods.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, we may be talking around the same time. We may just disagree on what the deer are doing at that time. You know, we might be reading the deer's activity as different. But I prefer after that first, basically right after peak breeding, after that, those first does have become receptive and been bred, and then the bucks are looking for that second, you know, that second doe or that second batch of does coming in the heat. Because what I find happening is with that first seeking pre-rut and like seeking phase, the bucks lock down, if you will, to a doe kind of early, like a lot. They stay with those does a lot longer at first because, like, oh, this is the first doe that's showing any sign of estrus, you know, so I'm hanging out with her, like,
sure.
And then after that one has been bred, you know, after that first wave of them came in and they've been bred, then that buck is really, you know, jazzed up. And there's a lot of, you know, the smell of estrus is in the woods. You know, he's really looking now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's found one, he's got one, and he knows I need to breed. I need to breed more.
Sure.
You know, I need to pass my genes along. So that's the time I really like, which, you know, is a little, it's typically about a week, half a week later than a lot of other people typically kind of mark the X on their calendar.
If deer feed or corn is a strategy you use to get deer in front of your stand or in front of your cameras, check out Monster Whitetail Grub. They're an Ohio deer feed company, and they've got what you need when it comes to deer feed. They've got their signature Monster Whitetail Grub feed, which is a high protein feed with mineral mixed in, and you can get different additives added to it. They've also got flavored corn, which takes your regular corn and steps it up a notch. And then if you just want straight mineral, they've got that also. So go to ohiohuntsman.com/sponsors and find out where to order it. I know they're getting into more and more retailers now, so maybe there's a retailer near you. If not, you can order right from Monster Whitetail Grub. And with that, let's get back into the conversation. So I guess that leads us into marking the X on the calendar, right? So if you were, let's do this. Let's looking at the calendar this year, right? November 1st starts on a Sunday. So what do we want to start with? If you were going to pick a weekend to hunt, or if you were going to pick, you know, maybe 5 to 7 days to hunt, what do you guys like?
I mean, in my situation, I guess we can do both because they overlap each other. We'll start with the weekend.
All right. So if you were going to do, you know, maybe take like a Friday off or a Monday. So let's say you were going to do like a 3-day weekend. What? And that was it. What weekend would you pick? So you've got Friday 6, 7, 8, Friday the 6th, Saturday 7. You could go earlier and do, you know, October 31st, November 1st, you know, that weekend. You could go 13, 14, 15, November 20, 21, 22. What do you guys, what do you like if you had one weekend to pick?
One weekend for me, I would probably do 6, 7, 8. Or if you could get that Monday off, 7, 8, 9 would be even better.
Okay.
I think, but it's tight for me because Halloween weekend, 30, 31, 1 would be a close second. And that is not your traditional rut. And that's definitely pre-rut. So you'd have to hunt it differently. But I do think, I mean, it's historical. People say all the time, a lot of big deer get killed on Halloween. And I think that is because that's like the peak of the responsiveness to calling. I think deer respond best late October, early November to your rattling, your grunts, your, you know, that kind of hunting over scrapes.
Sure.
That's when I think you have your best, you know, that's when they're checking the scrapes because they're trying to find that first doe. They're really feeling it. Their testosterone's ramped up. They're sparring. So I think if you're someone who likes to call and you don't like to sit in the woods quiet, that's maybe your best weekend is Halloween weekend. But I think 7, 8, whether you want to go 6, 7, 8, 7, 8, 9, for me, I think that's probably the best weekend for that. Like you were saying, Jason, that chasing, that seeking, deer being on their feet and moving. Historically for us, I know from our small sample size, but our family of hunters, the four of us, that basically like November 10th and 11th is the prime time. We've all killed our biggest bucks outside of Jeff. I think Jeff shot yours was during gun season, right, Jeff?
Yeah, mine was the second day of gun season. Yeah.
Okay. But Dad, Jason, and me, all of our biggest bucks were all killed on either the 10th or the 11th. So I'm partial to that time frame. So that's kind of where I said if you roll into like 7 days, I would do that weekend, 7, 8, and then that week, 8 through 14. That would be my prime time for rut. But I think if you get into that 14, 15, you're flirting potentially. And again, there's a lot of impacts for the rut, but and the peak breeding and that, a lot of it's dependent on a lot of things. Weather being one of them, mm-hmm. at least daytime. You know what I mean? If it's time, it's time. They're going to breed. But if the weather patterns don't line up right, a lot of that breeding can happen overnight where you're not going to see that, you know, chasing or whatever. If that weekend of 7, 8, we get some kind of Indian summer and it's 70 degrees outside, the deer aren't going to want to be running during the day. It's too hot.
Yeah.
So there's things you got to take into consideration too when it gets closer to time. But for me, that 7, 8, 9, 6, 7, 8, whatever you can cut it, that's when that's when we're going to do our bow weekend down at the cabin. I think that's the better weekend, the best weekend out of the options this year.
Yeah.
Jeff, you agree or would you pick a different weekend?
I'd pick a different weekend.
Let's hear it.
I think, we have historically been very successful right around the 11th, 10th, 11th. And I think that's what I attribute that to is that that's right after those bucks have bred their first does. And they're looking for their next, they're looking for the more harder to find does. So that's when the bucks are really starting to run around crazy. So that starts it. So I would, pick the weekend of the 14th.
So how long in, and you know, this is just speculation, but because I could buy into that, you know, that 10-11 time frame is, you know, they've already bred their first doe and they're looking for, you know, second or third or whatever. How long do you feel like that period lasts?
What period? What's the question?
That period of them running around looking for the harder to find does.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I think basically from my experience, bucks are running around crazy for like from like the 10th for another like 2 weeks, you know, because I've seen a lot of rut activity, you know, bucks showing up out of nowhere for youth season. You know, like there's still a lot of rut activity during youth season.
Which is that weekend before, like the weekend before Thanksgiving, 21st, 22nd.
Yeah, yeah, this year, yeah, yeah. So, and I mean, honestly, that's also a great time. You know, my number one weekend would be the 14th. And then I would go a week earlier. But the only reason I would go a week earlier is because of the impact that the youth gun season has on the deer. You know, they're way less predictable because now there's the youth gun season, you know, which is pushing deer around. Plus, I kind of like to leave youth gun season to the youth. Like I like to try to stay out of the woods. You know, it's hard when that's one of the peak, you know, one of the, in my opinion, top three, at least, weekends to be hunting.
Sure.
But I like to try to stay out of the woods and let the youth have it. But I've seen a lot of buck activity during youth gun season. Yeah. So I really get excited, you know, around the 10th. You know, after that first week of October, November. I start, that's when I really start to get excited after that. And basically until, you know, youth gun season's kind of the end of what I see as like peak movement.
Okay. Yeah, so for me, if you know, if I was going to do a weekend, I think I would be with Jacob 6, 7, 8, or if you could get that Monday instead of a Friday, you know, 7, 8, 9 for me and Jacob, the way our schedules work, like I get every other Friday off. So it works out because I can hunt more but take less vacation. And that happens to fall on the 6th this year. So that sort of played into our decision to do our cabin trip 6, 7, 8 this year versus 13, 14, 15, because, you know, we would have to take an extra day of vacation to do that. So, but I historically, I mean, sort of echoing what Jake said, every year I get, well, I shouldn't say every year. I think the past, I forget if it's 2 or 3 years, but, you know, we go to the cabin for a bow hunting weekend. And then, you know, later in the season, I typically am running a camera out at a property here locally. And every year it seems I have a daywalker shooter buck on like the 9th or the 10th out there. And then after that, you know, I get you know, maybe I'll see a buck on the 11th, but past that, my at least good quality bucks, the pictures taper off a lot. And that's been historical, like I said, for at least two, but it might be 3 years now that I've run a camera out there, and it, you know, I can go back and look at the pictures every year. I think it's either the 9th or the 10th. I'll have a picture of a good buck walking, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon or something. So that little piece of data, I guess, leads me to favor that time period. So I guess if you were going to take a week, if you could take a week off, Jeff, I think you might differ. When would your week be if you were going to take a week? And I guess it doesn't have to be a weekend, but so let's say you were going to take 5 days of vacation with it. You know, you've got a typical schedule. You're going to take 5 days of vacation. What 5 days would you take?
What? Let me look at a calendar here real quick, just so I have it pulled up.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. So if I'm taking 5 days of vacation, like a full week, you know, calendar week.
Doesn't have to be. I'm just saying five, you know, so you could do like 11, 12, 13, 16, 17, you know, what 5 days would you take vacation?
I'd start the 10th, I think, and then would take, you know, the 10th through the 16th is what I would do.
Jake, what would you take? Jake, are you muted?
Sorry, yes, I was muted. I'm talking to myself. I still think I'd stand by my original. I mean, yeah, I'd probably stand by my original. I would take the 9th through the 13th because that would maximize my time in the woods, too, because then I could hunt 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15.
Sure, you get. Yeah, you get 2 weekends out of it.
Get two weekends that way.
I was thinking the same because, like I said, I historically I get pictures of deer, you know, daywalker bucks, 9, 10, 11. You know, a lot of us have shot good bucks in that time period. So I think I would be 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 also. So you should be in the woods sometime the first 3 weeks of November. what else do you guys want to talk about the rut?
I mean, basically, like I said, the most you can be in the woods those 3 weeks, the better. I guess the only thing I would touch on would be just kind of different strategies. And again, this is just one guy being me, who's not that experienced in the world of big buck hunting. But I do think that tactics change. You know, a lot of guys think or talk about calling during the rut, the rattling, the grunting, the doe estrus bleats, you kind of have to match those things with the phase of the time of the rut that you're hunting. You know, rattling. That's
a good point. Yeah.
Rattling doesn't necessarily, or sparring, which is what you're trying to imitate with rattling, doesn't necessarily occur at the same time that doe estrus bleats are occurring. A lot of times, by the time the does are in estrus, a lot of that sparring and battling has already happened. You know, the pecking order is in place. So a lot of times, you know, there's estrus bleat, but the mature buck already knows this is my place. I already whooped every other buck around here, and that's in my hood. So he goes around and he will start tending, and you can tell a mature buck tone wise from an immature buck. A lot of the other bucks will run away. You know, so sure. If you are after the big daddy, the single biggest deer in your woods, and that's the only buck you want, then maybe grunting and doing all that is fine. But
if you're just trying to get a buck, if you start hitting a lot of the commercial made buck calls, you might be scaring all your bucks away. Because whooped a week before by a buck that sounded just like that.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So you got to kind of be careful, I guess, with calling and know when to use what. You know, that early phase, end of October, first week of November, you're probably going to have, in my mind, more luck with rattling, hunting over scrapes. They're still working out the pecking order and kind of doing that. If you get into the second week of November, third week of November, you know, your deer probably anymore because it's already, or sparring, it's already been worked out, unless two big bucks decide to flirt on each other's land, so to speak, or range, then you might have a fight. But I think that might be more few and far between in terms of actual sparring and fighting, if you will, that time period versus early when it's all the bucks are sparring and working it out as to who gets first crack at her type thing.
Right. Yeah.
So I just think it's, I guess that's the takeaway, is just kind of know whenever you pick to be in the woods or are able to be in the woods, pay attention to what the deer should or could be doing and try to match your hunting with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Jeff, anything you want to add?
I mean, I think the only other sort of, I don't know, piece of advice or whatever is during the rut, your traditional hunting hours, you know, hunt the morning till 10 o'clock and then, you know, go back to the stand in the evening, kind of gets thrown out the window. The morning is still good, you know, it's still probably peak movement, but you're just as likely to catch, you know, a buck coming by your stand at noon or 1 or 2 o'clock.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, those daytime pictures I get out of the, you know, that property here locally, they're, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 2, 3 o'clock, something like that. So, yeah, that's a good point. All right. Well, if there's nothing else, then hopefully this has been helpful. I would be curious, too, to hear what you all, the listeners, think. You know, what weekend are you picking and why? What weekend, what part of the rut do you like? And, yeah, what weekend? It would kind of be interesting to see, you know, kind of collect a little anecdotal data from our audience or, you know, people out there. What weekend are you hunting and what kind of activity are you seeing? So with that, I think we'll shut it off and good luck everybody out there. And we'll talk to you next week. All right, so that's it for this week. Hopefully you guys have plans to get out and hunt the rut. It's an exciting time to be in the woods. Anything can happen at any part of the day, so do your best to get out there and stay out there. If you are looking for more content, we've got a whole archive of episodes you can go back and listen if you're new to the podcast. If you have been listening to the podcast from the beginning and you aren't following us on social, that's another way to interact with us more if you're interested in that. So we're Ohio Huntsman on Facebook, Ohio Huntsman _podcast on Instagram. And we like seeing what you guys are up to, sending us your pictures and things like that. So share that stuff with us. And if you're looking for Ohio Huntsman merch, go to ohiohuntsman.com/apparel and you can order shirts and hoodies and decals and that kind of stuff. So with that, I'll let y'all get back to your day and good luck. Hopefully you've had some success. If not, hopefully you have some success coming your way. And we will talk to y'all next week. Thanks for listening.